Welcome to Mind and Soul Matters. We're pleased to share with you the third and final part of our Mental Health Forum series on conversations about suicide, organised in collaboration between Mind and Soul Matters, Melville Baha'i Community and Lifeline. Today's episode gives us an insight into a personal story of overcoming mental health challenges and the impact of losing a brother to suicide. I will leave the introduction of our very special guest to Dr. Dina Ashourian, MC of the forum. If the content from today's episode raises any concerns for you, please reach out to your mental health service or contact Lifeline on 13 11 14.
I will now introduce our final speaker, Ms. Lisa O'Malley. Lisa has been a proud advocate and voice for mental health prevention and intervention for many years. Lisa grew up in a small country town in regional Victoria with four brothers, which helped shape the defining characteristics of her life: community, compassion, and persistence. Since a young age, Lisa has had a love of sport, fitness, and recreation. She has previously worked as a swim teacher, water aerobics instructor, and fitness trainer, which taught her the importance of the relationship between physical activity and mental health. Lisa moved to Western Australia in 1993 with her husband, Mark, and soon after into the tight-knit community suburb of Palmyra, where they would raise their two children and remain until this day. In the years that followed, Lisa became involved in school PNC committees, co-founded the SOS, Save Our Schools, parent lobby group, coordinated Palmyra Together newsletter, co-managed Palmyra Farmers Market, was elected as a councillor to the City of Melville in 2015, and now stands as a state member for Bicton of the Western Australian Parliament since 2017. Lisa is a vigorous supporter of mental health organizations and charities, such as the Kai Fella Foundation, Barbarians Group, the Mackie Cup, and Lifeline WA. In 2014, Lisa lost her brother Michael to suicide. His loss impacted and changed forever the lives of everyone who loved and knew him. In Michael's memory, Lisa has continued to take action to improve mental health resources and outcomes for those throughout her community. Lisa believes it is a moral responsibility for every one of us to step up to this task, and she has kindly agreed to share her story.
Thank you, Dina. So before I begin, I would like to acknowledge that we meet today on the lands of the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation and pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging. I also want to acknowledge the disproportionate impact of suicide in their communities and of their people, and I extend my respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people here with us today. I also want to acknowledge all of those in the room and watching online who have experienced loss by suicide. So a couple of disclaimers I have, but before I do that, it's pretty obvious. My voice is already shaky. But I know that for those of us who do share our personal experiences, they're really powerful opportunities, and I'm not going to shy away from that today, so bear with me. Disclaimers. So what I'm about to say is my personal experience of mental illness and suicide. I want to be clear in saying that I've been asked to be here because of my lived experience, and while I'm extremely grateful for the public platform which comes with being a Member of Parliament, I don't speak for the Parliament or government today. Likewise, whatever I may talk about as therapies or practices which I've found helpful to me are not to be taken as advice. Finally, before we dive into my story, I want to extend my heartfelt thanks to Dina and the Baha'i community of Melville and Lifeline WA for creating this opportunity. And I sincerely thank all of you here in person and online for joining this important conversation. Those of you who know me know how much I love to talk, know how much I love conversations. This one's difficult, but it's so important that I do it. So some of what I have to say may be uncomfortable for you. It certainly is for me. But remember, on the other side of discomfort, we just might find a way forward together. 2004, it was a time of big changes in my life. I became a mum, started up a small business with my husband, and there were the typical financial pressures that come with those things. But life was good with a loving and supportive partner, a healthy child, close-knit family and wonderful friends. I had no reason to be unwell, I just was. And that's the thing with mental illness. It does not discriminate. Anyone can suffer. Back then, I used to ask, why me? The simple answer is, why not me? At the time, being focused on the why of my mental ill health took up a lot of my headspace. My thoughts were a constant loop of chasing the reason for my illness. Because I figured that if I knew why I was sick, then I would have the answer to how to get better, a bit like a broken arm. Working in the fitness industry as I did back then, I had plenty of experience of physical injury, but I was out of my depth with psychological pain. And absolutely, in my personal experience, there is a connection between the two. It's certainly, Hoda has talked about psychological pain. I don't think there's a real difference. Psychological pain, physical pain. For me, the really interesting thing was the onset of my mental ill health manifested as physical ailments, debilitating neck pain, gastritis, insomnia, unexplained weight loss. I was convinced I had a terminal disease, and I initially chased my answers to why I felt so terrible with GPs and various specialists. Because, you see, I had all of the symptoms and I was in physical pain. But they were just that, they were symptoms. And so I was seeking relief from the symptoms only. I'd get better for a while, but then a new symptom would appear. It was actually a dear friend of mine who suggested that perhaps the cause of my distress was psychological. We've heard it before. At the time, I just wanted the pain to stop. It was at this time that I called Lifeline WA, which was a major turning point. So some things I learned during my mental crisis. I'd previously thought that recovery from a mental breakdown was linear, that a breakdown was a singular event. I found that getting to my rock bottom involved a series of breaking downs. Deep depression for me felt like being lost in a fog, punctuated by high anxiety, which saw me unable to sleep or focus. I was in constant flight and fight mode, constantly exhausted but unable to rest. I would ask my psychologist for the answer to getting better. She would say that I was the one with the answers and it was her job to help me find them. Eventually, I agreed with her. It was another turning point. So getting well and staying well, it doesn't just happen. It took years to understand what worked for me and I did not get there alone. Support from professionals, family and friends was crucial. Asking for help and accepting help isn't easy. We're still a long way to go. There's still a lot of stigma and shame around mental illness. It's taken me 20 years. Before today, only my family and a handful of friends knew of my personal struggles. Sadly, mental ill health is not confined to me and my family. My oldest brother was diagnosed with bipolar disorder in his 40s and tragically we lost our brother Michael to suicide in 2014. Michael's been gone for 10 years, but the impact of his death continues to be felt. I remain committed to making sure that others don't experience what I have, that they don't lose a brother, a sister, a mother, a father, a friend, a colleague, a son or a daughter. Words matter. Words are so important. Strike the word commit from the language whenever we talk about suicide. It's such a trigger word. I try to be kind when people say it because I understand it's probably just a habit. I don't think they mean anything by it, as in the person has done something terrible that they should be punished for. The other one that I feel quite strongly about, which we see in the media quite often, unsuccessful suicides. What, so they should try a bit harder next time? I mean, that absolutely makes me furious. So a couple of things there. Be kind to yourself. Be kind to others. The words you say to yourself are so important. So please just, we can't stop the words coming in, but we can challenge the words that come into our mind. CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy, was one of the therapies that was an absolute game changer for me. Be observant when you're around people. If you're not sure if they may be contemplating suicide or self-harm, to ask direct questions. You know, are you thinking of hurting yourself? Questions that were asked of me, obviously, when I made that call all those years ago. Are you with somebody? Really obvious stuff. Are you on your own? Is there somebody with you? I know that I've asked those questions to, sadly, to my brother, but these are really important things. And I hear people say things like, but I don't know how to respond. I don't know what to say. If they say they are, I'm like, well, learn. Go do a mental health first aid. Or there's a lot of resources out there. We can all be lifesavers, not just those who work on the crisis lines. Vigilance is crucial. If somebody is actually saying that they don't want to be here anymore, words like that, you got to watch them. Just don't leave them alone. Find what works. Seek professional help. That's what we do. I've recently been diagnosed with arthritis, so I'm seeking professional help with how to manage that, the same as I did my mental health 20 years ago. So it's really, really important to get professional help. Oh, I'm exhausted. It is exhausting. We talk about, you know, psychological pain, physical pain. Pain is pain. And feeling any form of pain is absolutely exhausting. So pace yourself. I'm terrible at that. I'm incredibly grateful. And gratitude is one of the things I think that really has helped me in all of these years since. And that is being grateful for the assistance and the help that I've got, that I've had over the time. Grateful to be in the position that I'm in now, that I might actually be able to help others, either directly or indirectly. Community and connection. I mean, that's really what my experience and understanding of the Baha'i community is very much about that, about connection and community. Loneliness, social isolation. Sometimes when I go out in my job and knock on doors, which seems like a strange thing to do, to check in on people, ask how they're doing. In my electorate, I may be the only person that they speak to in the day. Reach out. My mum, she has lots of great bits of advice. She'd say, just smile at the person walking the other way. It could be the only interaction, you know, that they have in a day. I've got some other stuff, but I think I'll leave it there.
Now it's time to open it up to questions.
Thank you. I was just wondering if you could help us with how we can be most helpful to those who have lost, I don't like the term lost somebody, they know exactly where they are, when their loved one has died through suicide. What is the most important and helpful thing that we could do to support them through that journey?
Be there. Just be there. You may not. This is a time when you probably don't need words. In fact, words can be really not necessarily unhelpful. They may be unhelpful, but it's hard to find the words around that. Sorry, another piece of my mum's advice. Mum has some awesome advice. I've lived this one my whole life. Grew up in a very small town, tight-knit community, and Mum would always say, if something bad happens to somebody, go see them really quickly. Don't leave it. Because the longer you leave it, the harder it gets and gets awkward. And whether it's an illness or a loss or whatever it is, you just, which goes on to my theme of just be there, just go. In this last year alone, I've lost a good friend of mine that's lost her husband to suicide. My nephew just lost a friend. Somebody else I know just lost a brother. Like, it's just really, really difficult. So go, be there, do it straight away.
One of the reasons I volunteer at Lifeline is because one of my friend's fathers killed himself when we were 21. Last weekend I was at Rottnest with my group of girlfriends who we all met when we were I was four. So without giving away my age, but we've been friends a very long time, nearly 50 years, the girl that I went to kindy with. But the girlfriend whose father killed himself was there, and we haven't seen her. She lives in Brisbane. And we all talked really openly about her father's death, and we honoured him in that way. And I think it's really important that, you know, that we do talk about it. People often are fearful of talking about, you know, bringing it up because they think people might get upset. But we talked quite openly, and he was a very good family friend of ours. ours. And so subsequently I spoke to my parents about him, and so we, you know, reinvigorated him, because it's been, well, I'm turning 54 this year, and we realised that John took his life when he was 47. And that put us all into shock at the weekend, because we were like, oh my gosh, you know, he was really old when he killed himself, what we thought when we were, you know, young and naive at 20, 21. And we all realised, oh my goodness, you know, his life had stopped, you know, and he wouldn't, you know, be experiencing this like we are. So it's actually, I think it's really important to talk about it. And, you know, and she was so grateful that we hadn't forgotten him and that we honoured him in that way. And I think it's important, you know, that Lisa does that with Michael, and that, you know, that you do that with anyone that's passed away, you know, that we honour their memory.
I do want to wrap up now. A very big thank you to Lifeline WA for co-sponsoring this event, along with the Baha'i community of Melville. Again, thank you to our expert panelists and the organizing task force. And finally, if today's forum has raised any concerns for you, please check in with your supports or call Lifeline on 13 11 14.